Good evening, folks. We will call our meeting, our November 17th Village Board meeting to order. Roll call. Trustee Genrich.
Here.
Trustee Dart.
Here.
Trustee Sampson.
Here.
Trustee Green.
Here.
Trustee Atwood.
Here.
Trustee Harris, unmute. Thank you. President Rafter here. Do we have a motion to modify or adopt the agenda as presented?
Move to adopt.
Trustee Green, second?
I'll second.
Trustee Genrich, any discussion? We have a motion to approve the agenda and a second. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes, thank you. Announcements. Debbie, have we received any announcements from any village residents?
We have not.
Thank you. Brad, do you have any announcements from staff?
I don't.
Okay. Mr. Harris, do you have an announcement?
Yes. I just want Giant Daycare is hosting an event on Thanksgiving, and they are allowing people who don't have meals to come by, do a drive-through, and pick up meals. They're hoping for 300 people. They already have 200 signed up. They're setting it up on an appointment basis where people will do a drive-through, so you can just pick up your meal and go. They've asked if you are interested in getting a meal, contact them, and they'll give you an appointment time. They also have a few slots available if you're not able to get to their facility. They're on 1309 South Webster, and they will actually bring the meal to you. With the new space that they've opened, they're trying to do something to give back. Originally, they wanted to host an event, but obviously with what we have going on with COVID-19, they're not able to, but this was their next best thing. They're also accepting donations, whether it's a couple different things of food, which you could find on their webpage, or even a cash donation to try to defray some of the expenses. But I thought it was a great idea for trying to help out in the community, and I wanted to make sure people were aware of it.
It surely is. Thank you very much for bringing that to our attention.
I'm not sure if it was just my computer or all of yours. I didn't hear the name of the daycare when you said it.
It's called You Are My Sunshine Daycare. They just opened up a new building. They were on the east side of Webster. Now they're on the west side of Webster. 1309 South Webster, I believe, is the address.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other announcements from my fellow trustees? Or staff? Hearing none, we will move on to item number four, our 2021 budget hearing. Is there anyone on the phone tonight who would like to say anything about the village budget? Second call, is there anyone in the meeting who would like to make any comments about the proposed budget? Third and last call, anyone interested in speaking about the upcoming budget? Hearing none, we will close the budget hearing. We'll move on to item number five, action regarding adoption of the 2021 budget. We've been through this several times with some folks, so I'll accept the motion to whatever. Trustee Genrich.
I would make the motion to adopt the 2021 budget as presented.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second, Matthew.
Trustee Harris, any discussion? I'd just like to make a comment. Once again, a great deal of thanks to our village staff for an outstanding job of especially during this time of maintaining expenses and managing with the resources that we do have, especially with the increased cost due to COVID. I'd also like to thank our new finance committee for helping out and really being a great sounding board for staff. You've all done a great job, and I thank you very much. Any other discussion on this? Here, Trustee Sampson.
Yeah, just looking at what some of the other comparable communities had done, they were all in the same ballpark. There were some local taxing entities, maybe Brown County was one of them, who for unique circumstances were kind of outliers. But I thought I saw that most of them were around where we are, which is about 2.7%, something like that. Is that about right?
From what I've seen, I haven't looked at all of the other area budgets. But, you know, with how much we're increasing it and how much we're losing thanks to COVID, we're pretty even.
So. Yeah, but I thought, with the exception, I think, of Brown County, the other ones I saw went up a couple percentage points. I don't know that there were any over 3, certainly none over 4. So I think we were all in the same boat, the comparable size communities.
Thank you for bringing that up. Any other discussion? We have a motion to approve the proposed 2021 budget and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes unanimously. And I would like to say I think this is the first time that we've never had anyone show up at a budget hearing and say something good, bad, or indifferent. I think that might be thanks to virtual, but it also may be just because you guys do a great job. So thank you.
We'll go with that.
Yes.
We'll go with that. Okay, we will move on to item number 6. We are in the company of some folks from the East River Resiliency Project regarding the East River and how we clean it up and make it a great habitat. Here, who is going to kick off the night?
I will be. I'm going to try to share my screen here.
Okay.
Thank you very much for having us.
You're welcome. Blake is new to Green Bay, folks.
Yes.
Welcome.
2 weeks ago.
Before you get started, since Blake's going to be pretty much running the show, I just wanted to introduce myself. I know a number of you, but I'm Angela Kowalczyk-Adrians. I'm with Newwater, and we were a part of this project, part of getting the funding for it. But Blake is with Nature Conservancy. He was hired for this project to kind of lead the effort. So he's going to go ahead and give this presentation, but I'd be happy to answer any questions. I'm an Alloway resident, and I'm on the Parks and Recreation Committee as well. So I'm very familiar with the area and be happy to answer any questions you have with regard to this project.
Thank you, Angela.
Yeah, thanks so much, Angela, for being here. She's here to bail me out in case I put my foot in my mouth. Okay, so I'll just go ahead and jump into it. And thank you for the introduction. So my name is Blake Newman, and as Jim mentioned, I'm pretty new to Green Bay and to this position. I just started about a month and a half ago, actually, and I am working with the Nature Conservancy on this East River Community Resiliency Project. And so one of my first tasks when I started was to start to read about some of the flooding news around the East River. And so in that during that process, I came across a number of headlines about the home evacuations. These were mainly headlines from the past couple springs, so spring of this past year, 2020 and 2019, about home evacuations and just general flooding, road closures, even some concerns of sanitation and disruption to public infrastructure, like utilities and roads. So I started just compiling a list of, you know, the different impacts of the flooding as far as I could tell from all of these news stories, and came up with impacts to property, from homes and businesses, even to vehicles, to public services, like, as I mentioned, school closures, disruption to sanitation systems, most recently even COVID test sites, as well as public infrastructure like roads and utilities, stormwater systems, and even down to agricultural systems. So that gave me a very good sense of just this issue on a local scale. And then I started to learn about sort of the context that this was all occurring in terms of the state of Wisconsin, and looked at a report from NOAA on from back in 2017. They put out these series of state reports on just climate summaries, and some of their key takeaways were that the overall temperatures in Wisconsin appear to be warming on average over the past 100 years. That's a trend that's predicted to continue. In terms of precipitation, two observed major characteristics that I would like to point out is an increase in overall annual precipitation, that's summer and winter precipitation, as well as an increasing number of extreme precipitation events. And they classify those extreme events as any one-day period where you would see precipitation amounting to 2 inches or more. So that's basically, those were the two major takeaways in terms of precipitation. And this graph of the contiguous lower 48, I think, sort of sums those two findings up well, is that Wisconsin, they're projecting in coming years, may be headed for up to even a 15% increase in annual precipitation. And I did some back-of-the-napkin math for Green Bay just to see what that would mean. And in terms of rainfall, that's would amount to potentially 4.5-inch increase in terms of annual precipitation. And upwards of maybe even close to 8 inches of snowfall annually. And I'm definitely not an engineer by trade, but I imagine that's probably going in the wrong direction from a public works standpoint. So then I just sort of, I guess, thought about how this would play out in terms of a very recent event, October 22nd, 23rd, rain event that I was hearing about just before I moved here. And this was just a list of some of the rainfall tallies from across the state, and I pulled out a couple of municipalities from Brown County, and found that, you know, this across Brown County totals ranged anywhere from 2.5 to 3.5 inches, and that was just the one day rainfall totals. And actually, this story had a user photo from Alloway, Donna in Alloway, recorded somewhere between 5 and 5.5 inches for the 2 day total of rainfall during this event. So in terms of a 15% increase, I was thinking about what this would mean, and you know, potentially we're looking at somewhere between a 3 and a 4 inch rainfall event instead of a 2.5 to 3.5 inch rainfall event in one day, which again, somewhat significant increase potentially. So that kind of brings into the discussion this project that we're doing, I guess just by way of background. So the origin of this project was sort of to start trying to think about how we could answer the question of, in this context of more extreme weather events, greater amount of rainfall, how do we prepare communities in the East River watershed to become more flood resilient and better prepared for these precipitation events? And so Chen Wu is with UW-Madison's Department of Engineering, has been interested for some time, I guess, in doing some modeling in the East River watershed, and approached Julia Nordyke from Wisconsin Sea Grant, and they pulled in New Water and the Nature Conservancy to write some grants and have secured funding for the next 18 months from the Fund for Lake Michigan and the Wisconsin Coastal Management Program, those funds provided by NOAA, to start thinking about this question of how can we approach this topic of flood resiliency from more of a watershed scale, and more of a holistic way of planning for resiliency. So that now, I guess, brings us to that concept of watershed scale planning. This is a map of the different watersheds throughout the state of Wisconsin, and we are here in the Lower Fox River watershed. And if we expand this, I made this map just to sort of illustrate the municipalities in the East River watershed. And the red outline here, you can see on the inset map as well. The little tan sliver here is where the East River watershed is in relation to the Lower Fox. And the red outline shows the boundaries of that watershed in terms of the different municipalities that comprise it. The gold outline is the Bear Creek watershed. But the idea here is that any rain that falls within these boundaries of, you know, the lower East River and Upper East River watersheds eventually will make its way into the East River, and that will eventually make its way into the confluence with the Fox River and the Bay of Green Bay. So trying to think about how we can plan more collectively and holistically in a way that accounts for that is the aim of this project. And this graphic is just meant to illustrate sort of the interconnectedness of that system. When rain falls at the top of the watershed in an area like Brilliant or Holland up here, you may see more agricultural uses up there. So you have topsoil, fertilizer, nutrient inputs, manure potentially running off into the East River. Whereas in the more developed areas of the lower East River, you might have contaminants from combustion engines and just from residue on impermeable surfaces like roads and driveways. And all of that finds its way into the East River eventually. And so to try to address those concerns of water quality, but also the fact that this entire channel sort of runs the length of this watershed, and all of that water is interconnected in one system, we have to plan in a way that accounts for that. And I like this quote from the Aldo Leopold Foundation. I thought that sort of embodies what the spirit of watershed scale planning is, which is to build collaboration, trust, and understanding among the network within this East River watershed in order to increase the resiliency of the system. And by doing that, that we can also sustain livelihoods, and that one sort of relies on the other. And that was from a soil demonstration project, the Coon Creek Watershed Project, that was incredibly successful back in the 1930s. So, enduring legacy there. So now I'll talk briefly about the two components of this project, starting with the flood risk hydrologic and hydraulic modeling that Chin Wu and Adam Beckley have been doing. And so in terms of that component, I'm definitely not as well versed in that, so I hope I'm not quiz too much on this. But they have been hard at work installing some stream gauges along the East River. And they're trying to get a better sense, better resolution of the hydrologic characteristics of the river at different points along it. So I think they installed something like 10 stream gauges all along the river. They're getting continuous data from that, and they're plugging that data into some different scenario-based flood models And the different scenarios they're looking at are based on some climate and weather factors, as well as land use and land cover factors. So looking at, you know, if precipitation increases by X amount, what this will mean in terms of flooding, where it's going to occur, how development might affect that, how development in particular areas might affect that. So they're looking at a lot of different scenarios, and then they're going out into the community to verify their models and identify where the areas of greatest vulnerability are going to be. So that's one side of things. The side that I'm more directly involved with is putting together this East River Resiliency Collaborative that's going to be comprised of many of the stakeholders within the watershed. And it's, for this initial phase at least, organized sort of like a community of practice, where there's we have a group of stakeholders that are unified by a common interest or set of concerns. So the first stage of this process is to formalize and codify what those common interests are, what the concerns are, so that we can start to coalesce a network of support around those specific issues, and then begin sharing knowledge, resources, and hopefully eventually funding to start addressing those issues and finding solutions that are going to be long-lasting and sustainable, and carry this work on into, phases beyond the 18 months of the scope of this project. So finally, just to wrap up and give you a sense of what we've been working on, as I mentioned, this is an 18-month project, and we have sort of, I think at this point, it is intended to go through December of next year. In terms of the flood study, for the initial phase of this work, they've been doing a lot of initial scoping, a literature review for the modeling that they're doing, and the installation of the stream gauges. At this point, currently, they've moved more into finalizing the hydrologic model that they'll be using and verifying that with some field observation. And then eventually, the end goal of this is to provide the most useful, usable data to municipalities and decision makers once they have run through some of the different scenarios from that flood model. As far as the Resiliency Collaborative, initially, there's a lot of planning. I know before I arrived, as I mentioned, I've only been here for about a month and a half, and actually 2 months at this point. There's a lot of initial planning that went into developing a partner list and identifying who the stakeholders would be, sent sort of an initial update on what the project would be like. And since then, I've had a chance to speak with about 30 folks, some of you in this meeting actually, about what the concerns around flooding in the East River are, and get perspectives from all the municipalities. And we're now taking that feedback and putting it into a needs assessment so that we can see where the areas of concern are, how to go about addressing those and moving forward, and trying to find some solutions that are going to address the concerns that we've identified through this initial scoping. Then eventually take that feedback into the first meeting of the Resilience Collaborative, which we're hoping will be sometime in early February. Finally, just from the project management side of things, I know Angela has been really heavily involved with the grant management and the reporting, grant reporting and invoicing that's been ongoing through this. I think that we're coming up on the first quarter of just reporting for that. And additionally, we've also been developing some outreach materials like this presentation. I think that I sent a fact sheet that hopefully you may have received, and that's going out to the collaborative partners probably sometime next week. And moving forward, we're going to be looking at planning this collaborative meeting to occur sometime in February, as well as ongoing reporting. And down here at the bottom, I just have a note that we are also we're trying to look into grant funding to continue this work beyond the scope of the 18 months. So that's something that's top of mind and that's come up a lot in these initial conversations. So with that, I wanted to thank you again for letting us join you and see if any of you might have some questions for us.
Thank you, Blake. Does anyone have questions for Blake or Angela?
Maybe just a comment. Great information. Thank you, both of you. So.
Thanks very much, Rob.
Yes, thank you. And sorry, it took me a minute to figure out how to get that next screen back up. Are you going to send us a copy of your presentation? And is this going to surrounding municipalities as well?
Yes. So I've been, as part of the just initial preliminary conversations we've been having, we are planning to attend all of the municipal board meetings. This just happened to be the first one, so thank you again for letting us jump on this one. But mostly we will be in December, I think, on a lot of those municipal and town board meetings presenting this information. And I would be happy to send a copy. I think I sent a PDF of the slides, so Brad and Jim, I think that you should have an attachment of those. You're welcome to distribute that, or I can send it to you.
Okay. I do have it. My intention is to send it out to everybody. I wanted to have you do the presentation first, and
okay.
In case something were to change, I didn't want the information out too soon.
Great. Okay. Thanks, Brad.
Thank you.
My question would be, is this more about urban flooding and resiliency of municipalities and their services, or is it about runoff and bad stuff going into the bay?
That's a great question. Angela, you can help me out.
Yeah. So when we were writing this grant, kind of the objective was the concern with all the flooding. We saw the need for the flood study to help with some of that information. But also the collaborative of working on a watershed scale, because some of the solutions we may find, for instance, in Alloway, may not be anywhere in Alloway. This is a great opportunity to work with other partners in the watershed, because some of the solutions to the flooding in Alloway could be those upstream communities. And those, a lot of those are agricultural-based, and maybe there's opportunities there to create additional flood storage that could help them in downstream communities. And with that comes water quality improvement. So flood mitigation and water quality really kind of mix together a lot in when it comes to some of those solutions that you would implement to manage flooding would also benefit water quality. So although our agencies all came together with, you know, obviously our work is really heavily in concern with water quality, but we saw the need for addressing flood mitigation, and in doing so, we'll also see those water quality benefits. But in answer to your question, the project is focused on flood mitigation.
I'll just jump in to elaborate on that. Thanks very much, Angela, for helping me out. I think that's definitely the idea of, like, looking at the whole watershed is that we're trying to be holistic about the way that we approach the planning. And I can say that just from having talked with now, folks from all of the different municipalities, there are concerns all along the watershed. They manifest very differently, but there is a commonality that there's a concern of flooding and of water quality throughout the entire East River watershed. I think, like Angela said, there's potentially more that can be done upstream, where there's maybe not so much pressure in terms of the development, I think that there's that's the purpose of looking at it holistically, is that there we're trying to co-generate benefits in terms of the water quality and flooding issues.
So between now and the end of 2021, this is when you'll be doing your research and coming up with recommendations going forward?
Yeah, and I will also throw this back to Angela after I just take a stab at I think that the sentiment is that this will be an initial phase and maybe even sort of like a proof of concept where we're trying to build the case for continuing this work beyond the 18-month scope, and that hopefully by doing that we might be able to secure additional funding to continue on with this work beyond the end of 2021.
Yeah, so to elaborate on that, so we're kind of calling this a first phase because so much of this is kind of the data gathering part of things. That flood study is, you know, really going to be the bulk of it, getting that background information. So to say that we're going to get to the end of this project and have solutions or answers for you would be misleading because we're working with all of the partners in this collaborative and bringing the data that we get from the flood modeling, working with the, you know, each individual stakeholder to refine that model and try to get it towards answering the question that would benefit the community. But to take that next step of getting the data that we have and further working with that model to identify solutions, identify maybe even on the ground specific projects that could then help reduce flood issues. You know, as far as just coming up with some mitigation strategies using the flood study that's developed as part of this study is what we're thinking of kind of for that next phase. But for the funding and the time that we have for this, it's mostly this flood study and working with communities to answer the questions that you have in order to then push us in that direction of finding those solutions.
Great. Thank you.
I just have one comment, if I may, Jim. As far as water quality, I don't know if it's because of the amount of water that's working within the wetlands that are adjacent to the river body. There have been more people fishing East River this year than I've ever seen, and the success they're having is crazy. I was at Wheezy Park and came across some kids and a dad fishing. They had a 13-inch perch.
Wow, that's awesome.
I mean, those are the nice stories you want to get out as well. As the quality improves, obviously the fishery is going to improve. And being in such a shallow body of water, it's definitely a challenge, but still there are potentials.
That's
17-inch northern, too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Down from the entrance, and a catfish that the guy couldn't even get in the on shore. And amazingly enough, I don't know if it's the retention ponds or what it is, but by that kayak launch at the entrance of Green Isle Park, you can actually see to the bottom of that water in that area.
That's awesome.
That was 5 years ago. You couldn't say that.
Did you see the manatee there the other day?
I did not.
That's cool.
Now, Blake, and I think Angela, you're probably well aware of this, but you know, from the village's standpoint, what the village itself is undertaking to improve the water quality along the East River. We did bank stabilization, 93, 4, and 5, maybe even 96. We purchased, I think it's about 41 acres of former farmland, converted that into, you know, park natural areas. And I think we have 6 ponds along the East River now. So I think from the village standpoint, we've been very proactive in trying to do our part.
That was definitely the sense that I got from the conversations that I had with Jim and Trevor and can't remember who else I spoke with. But yeah, I'm certainly very impressed with what all you have done in terms of being very forward thinking about this.
Among us core team planners, we know that LOAs are LOAs the superstars of the East River. I make sure they all know it.
Okay, so we'll put the cone of silence over this meeting. How do we get everyone else to do their job?
That's
efforts like this, we're trying.
Yeah.
I think we need your leadership as the most diplomatic answer to move people in that direction. Hopefully by being such good models of, you know, how to address resiliency by being proactive and being forward thinking about it. Hopefully you can be sort of like a demonstration site for others to look to, especially in these downstream communities a more balanced style of development.
The thoughtfulness of caring about the East River dates back many years ago when the development of the East River Parkway was put in place. And Angela, I don't know if you've seen that plan or not.
I don't think
it's
the East River Parkway.
Yeah, I used to have a copy. I'm sure I still do somewhere. But several decades ago, the village started to purchase land along the East River for the protection. I mean, that started way back in, I want to say, 50s, maybe even 60s, and it could even be before that.
Yeah, thank God for that forward thinking, or imagine the impact of some of this flooding we've been seeing if it wasn't for that East River Parkway. If that had all been developed up, yeah.
Hi, Blake, this is Sean. I spoke to you on the phone. Just curious, will there be grant opportunities through this program to assist the village to build additional best management practices along the East River?
That's definitely, that's very much top of mind. I think Angela probably is better equipped to answer that. I know we've been having conversations about FEMA funding, but Angela, could you?
So as this program is referred to, there won't be any, grant program part of this, because this isn't really a program. It was just Nature Conservancy, UW-Madison, Sea Grant, and New Water kind of coming together to write a grant to get the funding to do this study. We hope to keep this effort going with additional grant funding to come up with some solutions. With that next step of working with communities to identify solutions, if you're familiar with a hazard mitigation plan, it kind of is in the same vein of an effort where you identify projects, flood mitigation projects in this case could be some examples, that could help minimize that risk. And then from there, there's funding programs out there. And like Blake mentioned, FEMA's a big one. There's, especially an effort with FEMA to fund kind of a green infrastructure-focused flood mitigation. That's been a big push to, rather than kind of the hard, engineered solutions, which they'll still fund those, but kind of more looking at where there's more nature-based solutions to manage flooding. There's definitely funding opportunities for that, and as part of this effort, we're hoping that we can, continue to provide assistance to municipalities just based on the experience that, I have with writing grants, that Nature Conservancy has, Sea Grant has. We see, that kind of group as just having the resources to be able to help communities with this effort. So I definitely see continued efforts with that, but as part of this particular initiative, we won't be funding anything ourselves, but we'll just be helping you to get funding.
Great.
Thank you.
Excellent question.
Do we have any other questions or comments? Hearing none, Angela and Blake, we will thank you very much for your time.
Yes.
Thanks again. I'll stop sharing now.
Keep fighting the good fight. Let us know how we can help.
And, all right, thank you.
Thank you very much for the work you do.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. Very interesting project.
And I'll be sharing that information tomorrow. I'll send out emails with the documents that Blake provided to me. And again, I didn't want to send them out in the event they changed. So,
okay, sounds good.
Thank you.
Okay, we will move on to item number 7. Debbie, did we receive any public comment?
There was no public comment.
Okay. We will move on to item number 8, action regarding reciprocity agreement with Bellevue for dance programs. Mr. Clark.
Yes, the Park and Rec Department is looking to partner with the Village of Bellevue for a partnership for the dance program. Started this partnership this past year with utilization of sharing of an instructor. And we want to continue that process of partnership and collaboration with sharing our classes as well. What we found in the past that our classes, you know, have not been full, things like that. And what we're wanting to do is allow residents of the Village of Bellevue to join classes in Alloway at a resident fee. And vice versa, they would allow Alloway residents to join their classes at a resident fee in Bellevue. So Alloway residents would not be charged that non-resident fee. To continue that partnership, we would hold a joint end-of-season dance recital. That would be held at Webster School. So just trying to come up with ways to improve our programs for our residents and have these partnerships and you know, continue to grow our recreation programs and opportunities.
Thanks. Do they have different classes than we do?
Yeah, as far as the types of dance, Bellevue would hold like ballet and hip-hop type dance, and then Alloway would have tap and jazz. So that it would give opportunities for residents of both communities to, you know, pick and choose which they would prefer to go to and, you know, attend those classes.
Okay. And those, on the back of your handout, you had the 2019 numbers. Were those 2019 numbers or 2020?
Those were 2019 numbers because 2020 with COVID was all a mess, and we ended up having to cancel dance shortly after it began. So the reason we put the numbers from 2019, that would be more realistic as to what our historical dance programs have been.
Okay, great. Thanks. Any questions for Chris? Okay, I'll accept the motion on this item.
I'd move to approve.
Trustee Atwood, do I have a second?
Second.
Trustee Green, any discussion? We have a motion to approve and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 9, action regarding facade improvement request from Wisconsin Medical Credit Union. Trevor.
Thank you. So we received a facade improvement program or application for Wisconsin Medical Credit Union for their new monument sign, as indicated. They were only able to receive 2 estimates. Typically, we ask for 3 if possible, but lately with how busy contractors have been, it's been really difficult to obtain 3. So they received 2. They're in the general ballpark, and they are looking for 50% of the funds up to the $3,100.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Any questions for Trevor? Matthew?
excuse me, my understanding from the information about our guidelines is that it would, this work would not be eligible if it's for new construction. And I think this would probably fall under those, that definition. That's what I'm seeing. I'm not looking for your opinion, Trevor. It's more just a comment of what I'm seeing.
Okay. Okie doke. I will accept the motion on this item. Trustee Harris.
I would move to deny the request for the facade improvement based on it not falling within the established guidelines.
Second.
Second, Trustee Dart. Any discussion? So, I'm sorry. Go on.
Discussion? Can I?
Yep.
Okay. I was just going to say, it's hard to improve a facade you just put there.
Yeah.
It just seems kind of an odd request if it's not really an improvement. It's brand new.
I thought the same thing when I first saw the request, but then under eligible improvements, I did see new signage and awnings. Where is it that you see that it's not eligible, new projects or new construction is not eligible?
Under non-eligible, bullet number 3 is construction of a new building. Now, they obviously had an existing building that needed improvement. But this obviously...
I think we'd be setting a bad precedence for new construction in putting that up, because any property that came into the village then being new or just relocating is simply a request for after signage to be paid for.
I have to agree with that. And in the first paragraph, encourage the upgrading and renewal of exterior facade signs and architectural features of existing commercial buildings.
Yep. Okay. Do I have any other comments?
The owners or the manager, whatever she is, they're aware of that and just thought, well, we'll give it a shot and hope, or will this be a total shock if we were to deny it?
She's not aware of the new construction section in there. I had that conversation with Trustee Harris. To me, I think we should update the guidelines to make it probably clearer moving forward. And I'm okay with not approving it based off of that interpretation. So I think it would be news to her. But I think they were seeking the funds to offset some costs. I don't think it's going to be detrimental to their business.
Okay. Thanks, Trevor. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any other discussion? We have a motion to deny the request in a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Looking forward to seeing them open. Item number 10, action regarding authorized staff to contract with Ehlers for a feasibility analysis report and possible creation of a tax incremental finance district number 2. Trevor.
Yes, and I want to start off first by apologizing by the colors I used in my map in the handout. Didn't realize they were Viking colors until that point.
We'll go with magenta, not purple.
So as it indicated in the memo, TID number 1 is a large TID, existing TID we have in the village. Covers majority sections of our commercial areas on Riverside and Webster Avenue. Created in 2012. We're now starting to hit a hump in that TID where for large scale projects, it may be a challenge to generate enough increment to support some large scale projects. So the discussion then was looking at a second TID or overlay TID. And we reached out to Ehlers to do the feasibility analysis for us, as well as some of the implementation processes included in it. The proposed boundaries are not set in stone, but staff's recommendations are included in the handout. So it include the key parts of the Webster-St. Joseph intersection that we've been discussing in some of our recent plans. Brad, Julie, am I missing anything?
No, I don't think you've missed anything. I think one of the biggest things is by creating this overlay, it gives us a few more tools in the toolbox.
Yes, thank you, Brad.
How far are we into the current TID? Is it like a third done?
Like, probably about a third, yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's about a third. So with those big projects, it keeps getting small. The time to make up your money keeps getting smaller and smaller. And if I think with the big project thought of it for the future use of that area, that you need some more time to really get the best from our dollars and our property. And it's a longer period of time. It's further off before we see the benefits, but it's really worthwhile, I think.
Right. And I should say that this wouldn't be committing any funds or anything to any project. It would just, like Brad indicated, be another tool in our toolbox to be able to utilize. And to kind of elaborate on what you're getting at, Trustee Dart, is even some of our projects now, even though we're only a third of the way done, by the time the project takes off, the planning stages, the construction, and then it gets valued, if something started today, we wouldn't be collecting revenue on it until probably 2024. So then you're about halfway through the TID.
Okay. Question, Trevor. We have it outlined in yellow. What is the likelihood of having another overlay at some point in time, potentially on the other side of Webster?
We discussed that. I think it's possible. I'm not sure on the likelihood. Best case scenario, we do something on this side of Webster and it generates enough interest for the market to support a future project on the west side of Webster. However, I'm a little more realistic, and I say that in the best way possible. I know that in this area, most projects are supported in some fashion with TID.
Yep.
And so it would be nice if maybe TID number one could support a project on the west side of the street.
Okay.
But there's always possibility of another overlay over there.
Okay. But from an administrative perspective, that would be a capable or a possibility.
Correct, yes.
Okay. And how much is this project going to cost?
Ehlers' estimate is about $12,500.
Okay.
And again, that would cover the feasibility analysis. They broke it down into three different phases: the feasibility analysis, the public implementation, so the hearings and meetings, and then the final stage of the state's middle.
Okay, and that's being funded by the TID?
Yes, that would be a reimbursable item to the future TID.
Okay. Okay, any questions for Trevor? Do I have a motion on this item?
Well, sure. No, if I could ask a question first. For communities that are a little farther down this road, you know, I wonder about opening the door to doing a bunch of micro TIDs on a case-by-case basis. Is there a downside to that, or is that something that's actually quite common when you might have one big sprawling area, but you have a number of real pinpoint developments? Is that fairly common, or is that a little more risky for whatever reason?
I can cover this, Julian, and if you had something to add, maybe. I think it's done both ways. This is a newer way of doing things. I don't know if there's I think when you weigh everything out, I don't know if there's one that's better than the other all the time. In certain situations, I think it makes sense to have a larger TID, like our TID number one is, because then a larger project could potentially support some smaller projects over time. However, what we found out with the large area that we have in TID number one is unless you have a lot of projects right away, it's challenging because we're waiting on the generation of the revenue to come in right away, and our experience, at least with TID number one, it's been a little bit slower going. Whereas if you have a smaller TID, where all the projects support itself, and that TID is essentially self-supporting without locking up a lot of area into a TID for 27 years or the life of the TID. The City of the Pier recently did a single parcel TID for the Irwin School condo project near their downtown. So like I said, it's a newer way of doing things, and I recall about a year or two ago the state pushing for some legislation that would encourage doing this more. That never materialized, but I think there's pros and cons to each one. Sorry, that's a long-winded answer, but
no, that was very helpful. Thank you.
Okay, I will accept the motion on this item.
I would move to approve.
Trustee Genrick, seconded by Trustee Atwood. Any discussion? We have a motion to approve authorizing staff to contract with Ehlers in a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 11. Action regarding job reclassification from Planning and Zoning Administrator to Director of Planning and Community Development. Mr. Lang.
I think the previous agenda item kind of explains why. it's truly what's taken place is the role that our ZMP administrator has been playing is much larger and more responsibilities associated with it, and you know, my recommendation to reclassify the position as a director, Trevor, or the position role as being part of the administrative team. That's kind of how we used the ZMP the last few years, is truly a team member as far as the administrative end of things go. And without Trevor's leadership over the last several years, I don't know if, we may have gotten a couple of these projects done, but he has been pretty creative, been able to build those relationships with developers, and it's really showing what's happening. Trevor indicated, and I keep bringing Trevor up because he is currently, obviously, the ZMP and or future director, but, you know, when the TID was created back in 2012, that was probably the biggest thing that was missing, is someone to really take that whole program and really run with it. And Trevor has stepped into that role and has done a phenomenal job in, you know, is bringing to the table additional opportunities, more tools for the toolbox. So with that, I can answer any other questions. Spoke with our attorney. This is certainly makes sense to do the reclassification, and was okay with that.
Very good.
I hope I explained it well enough, but I think the previous item pretty much summed it up.
Well, and your memo was very clear as well. Well written. Do I have a motion on this item? Trustee Harris.
Move to approve the job reclassification.
Second, Trustee Dart. Any discussion? I would prefer to have it called the puzzle maker, but I guess I'll open what the recommendation was.
Puzzle solver.
Problem solver, that's right. Okay, we have a motion. Any further discussion? We have a motion to approve the reclassification of the zoning and planning administrator position to the Director of Planning and Community Development, and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item number 12. Approval of job description for Director of Planning and Community Development. Do I have a motion on this item?
I would move to approve as presented.
Okay, do I have a second? Trustee Atwood. I'll start off the discussion. Under job purpose, where we say, second line where it says position and is responsible for the leadership, organization, and operation of the areas of planning, zoning, does it make sense to add economic development?
Then I think you're getting into yet another level.
But down further in the job responsibilities or somewhere down there,
it is listed.
We do refer to
it. I'm fine with that if you would like to insert it.
Does that fall under planning? Economic development. I mean, if it does, that's fine. But obviously, we have an opportunity here for economic development along our main corridor. It's what we're planning for, right? A lot of the planning. If and when the prison's gone, that'll be a big opportunity. And I just wonder, should that be included in the title or in the job purpose?
I guess I don't think it hurts to include it.
Okay. So who made the motion to accept? Trustee Genrich, would you be okay with that addition?
Yes.
Trustee Dart, would you be okay with that addition?
Yes.
Trustee Atwood, I apologize.
I thought so. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. You're on mute. I can't hear you. I can't hear your thoughts. Okay. Any other discussion?
Just that it's an awfully big job. It would be the only reason I would really be leery about taking the economic out of the first part. Because really anybody looking at that, so we have someone that's, you know, working in all those areas, but let's say, well, we can always change it, but if you go out to hire somebody else, are you going to be able to hire someone with all those purposes in mind? We're kind of asking like for a Superman.
Well, I've seen Trevor at the gym lately, so.
Well, I know Trevor's a Superman. I'm just saying as, you know, the job description himself.
I understand. We can all, it does say we can always change the job description.
That's right, we can always change it.
Okay, so we have a motion to approve with the addition of economic development under job purpose and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item number 13, Resolution 2020-27, amending fee schedule for dumpster storage containing permits. I think the memo is clear, but do you, Mike, do you want to add anything, or Brad?
I think Mike and Trevor have been working on this.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, I'll accept the motion then.
I'll make the motion to approve.
Trustee Genrich, do I have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, Trustee Sampson gets the second. Discussion. I have a question. In the first paragraph, it says, we've experienced an increased issue related to storage units and construction dumpsters. I'm assuming that that's residential where we've been experiencing those problems, or is it also commercial?
My point is more that it's been residential. With the building and also with just with mainly with the storage pods popping up all over.
And today we don't charge any fees for that?
No fees or no registration. We don't know when they come in, when they plan on going out.
Okay.
It can show up.
Okay.
With flooding, is that why they would pop up? Like people would have to get trailers to put their stuff in while they cleaned if we had flooding in spring?
Or some of them start out moving.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
But we have had. Area for their stuff, so we want to be able to know when they're coming in and get an estimated time that they would be leaving.
And I spoke over Mike when he started saying something, Penny, and that is that started out for the most use was when people were moving. They would put.
Oh, them. I'm sorry.
So.
I'll mute myself.
No, I talked over him. You didn't. Just a comment. In paragraph H1, third line from the bottom, refers to the planning and zoning administrator. So, seeing that we've just changed the title, we may want to go through our codes and make sure wherever it says planning and zoning administrator be changed to the appropriate title. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
Sure, I'll ask this. Is a fee like this something that's common in other communities? And is it mostly that we're seeing more problems with people exceeding that? Is the thing we're trying to solve by attaching the fee the fact that some people are letting them sit around too long? And right now we have no way of tracking that. I assume that's the reason, but anyway, is this pretty common in other municipalities?
Trevor? We looked around in this area. I don't know if it's too common. Our zoning consultants, when we approached them about the the issue when we were rewriting our code. This seemed to be a common solution in other areas outside of ours. The fee is really just to cover administrative costs of looking at doing this. But yes, the permit fee is to track the duration, but then also to track where they're putting these dumpsters and make sure that they're on hard surfaces and out of the public right away.
Sounds good, and I would not have an issue if we were the first one to do it, if we have that good rationale that it's starting to get pushed. People are pushing, some people are pushing it a little bit, and we want to get a handle on it. That's fine. Sounds good to me. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we have a motion to approve amending the fee schedule for dumpster storage container permits. And a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 14, delegating authority to issue operator licenses to the clerk treasurer. State statute or state law back in 2019, Senate Bill 203, gives the governing body the ability to assign that authority to another governmental person, employee. And in this case, our clerk makes sure that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. And our clerk is asking if we would like for the clerk to be responsible for approving the operator's license. Do I have a motion on this item? I guess our clerks are bored and they want more work.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Do I have a motion on this item?
I move to approve.
Trustee Atwood. Do I have a second?
Second.
Trustee Dart. Any discussion?
A quick question or something to just throw out is obviously if the state has made the passed a bill regarding it, it does have some great deal of approval throughout the state. I just didn't know if we should be looking at this in any kind of way where it's a board responsibility as opposed to putting another thing on the clerk treasurer, where it's the board doing the approval as opposed to the clerk treasurer, and if there's an issue, it would fall more on the board than that particular staff member.
Good point.
It seems pretty straightforward, but I'd rather just bring it up at this point before any approval's done.
You bring up a good point. What is the liability if something happens? So we do our background checks. Ultimately, we are responsible for approving that. What happens if...
I made the approval based on the fact that I thought it was helping to streamline it. Maybe we can get Debbie's opinion on that. Is that fair?
Yep. Debbie, can you share, please?
I'm fine with it either way. The bill passed that allowed you to designate it to another official. I guess we do the record checks. You're just given the names right now under the consent right. agenda. So if you'd prefer, we can leave it on the consent agenda and maybe give you more information. I'm not sure. Because as far as liability, I'm already the one saying that they're okay and telling you that they're okay.
Yep.
Understood.
Yes.
So I'm fine either way, whichever way you would like it. It's just that we do have housekeeping changes to do to our alcohol beverage code, and I just wanted to ask if you wanted that included with that those updates.
Okay. Well, surely doesn't hurt to continue to report the new operator licenses to the board. That's really what you're doing at this point in time.
Basically, yes, a consent agenda is just giving you the information. But we could also just share that as an email to the board on who we're approving. The same as we do for some of the solicitor license, things like that.
Right. I'm okay with that. Hold on, Trustee Green's trying to say something. No, Lynn, I cannot hear you. Try it again. No.
Well, if I can throw, just because I started all this, Debbie, I was just looking at it and also caring about if it wasn't going to cause you any extra work or put you guys under into any other kind of position. That's why I threw it out there. If it's good the way it is, and like I said earlier, with the if it's a bill that was passed throughout the state, obviously it has quite a bit of support.
And Lynn has a question. Have we ever denied one? Usually Debbie has them all in order.
We did just deny one. I checked with our directed enforcement officer. The record check that I found, he had a lot of habitual law violations. And according to Jason, he agreed. And so I denied that one without bringing it to the board because it didn't meet our code requirements.
Okay. Well, very good.
I don't know if Carrie has anything to add. You're welcome to add anything, but otherwise, those are my thoughts.
Carrie, do you have anything to add? No. You're on mute in case you don't know that. And Lynn? Still can't hear you. But what she typed was, she does a great job and catches them, exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark. Okay. I personally am satisfied with putting it in the hands of the clerk where it really is today. And I would just ask that you continue to report on the new operator's license so we can put it on record.
And this will come back in ordinance form for approval with the updates to the alcohol beverage. So if at that time you decide to change your mind, that's fine too.
Okay,
you
great.
Know, that'll give you more time to think about it.
Okay, very good.
Thanks.
So we have a motion to approve and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Okay, here's my communication medium tonight. Okay, while Trustee Green gets frustrated with her communication device, we'll move on to item number 15, Resolution 2020-28, regarding the spending of excess Green Bay Brown County Professional Football Stadium District sales tax. Julie.
Yes, the $21,340 we have in the 21 budget, which is it'll deplete this fund, and it's the second half, which is split between the general fund and the stadium district, excess stadium district sales tax fund, for the remainder of the market assessment. So it's a very lengthy resolution. Page 2 basically gives you the gist of, you know, we've got another $976 in, and we're going to spend that $21,340. So.
And the $21,340 is the remaining balance?
Yes, yes.
So it'll be zeroed out?
It'll be zeroed out, yes.
Do we expect future infusions of cash from this?
If we do get anything, it's going to be... Mm-hmm. Very much.
Okay. I would just recommend if you look at the very bottom of page 1,
yep.
The last line, it says $175,000 for the budget relief in the 20202 village budget.
Oh, yeah.
Can you change that? Okay. I'll accept a motion on this item.
Move to approve Resolution 2020-28.
Thank you, Trustee Harris. Do I have a second? Trustee Dart, any discussion?
Very disappointed that Matthew didn't catch that typo.
I'm surprised, actually. I just wanted to say, when I looked over this document, I thought, you know how eager everyone was to spend that right away and use it, and I just think we proceeded with caution and intelligence and restraint, and grateful we have some for this time.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah, 5 years. Okay, we have a motion to approve and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 16, the consent agenda, along with the operator's license. We'll take items 16A through D. I have a motion on that, the agenda item.
Move to approve.
Trustee Harris, do I have a second? Trustee Atwood. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Lynn says aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Moving on to item number 17, nuisance properties and other code enforcement activities. Mike sent an email to all of us regarding the pigeon. Right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Nuisance properties first.
Yeah. The nuisance properties, we still have just the one that I have issued the letter to and advisor of the consequences. She's an ongoing problem for 3 years. And I have issued her several citations. The problem, which is the growing problem, is that she doesn't have a mailing address, so myself and Direct Enforcement Officer Vogel need to go to her work every time you want to issue citations to deliver them to her. So it came down to the point that at the last one, she was given the nuisance property letter, explained what the action would be against her if she failed to take care of the house. It did help to some point, and it's an ongoing thing when I'm still working with her. As other nuisance properties, of course, everybody can say this year is a little bit different than everything else with trying to get around the village the time we were down. So there has been other. We do have some other properties that we are taking action with, but not quite at this point of the nuisance properties. So it's nice to have it. It's a little harder keeping track of the nuisance properties compared to the sheriff's department that have everything on record. But I'm working on different systems to attempt to be able to verify different calls and times. And as this goes on, it will get better.
Okay.
As for her, I saw Lynn ask, as for her address, she does not live at this property. I spoke with the mail carrier. He will not deliver property there, mail there, because of the wasp nest in the mailbox. And she has a home in Ashwaubenon, which does not pick up her mail. It's just a very strange type of person if you ever have to run into her. So at this point, we're doing what we can, continuing to monitor the house as much as I can. The neighbors almost gave up. They're so disappointed or so upset that they even stopped calling. So I make it a point to monitor the house as much as I can and keep an eye on it.
If you're issuing citations, she's going to court, right?
Yes, she has gone to court. She has been fined, both with us and with the village of Ashwaubenon. She doesn't seem to bother her. When Deputy Vogel and myself issued her a citation. She said, well, can I pay it now? Just the way she was. The judge knows who she is, but he has to keep a very strict area. He can't find out what's going on before it comes up to it. But he knows the person, and he has given her chances. She hasn't taken them, so he has fined her. She's probably got a couple $1,000s of fines throughout the village of Alloway already.
Okay.
And if she continues, it will. Reference to the second part of your issue, reference the other code enforcement. Last meeting, you asked us to look into the person that you allowed to keep his pigeons. Mm-hmm. Very strange situation. I did receive one complaint. That's how I found out that he had pigeons. Otherwise, I wouldn't have known they were there.
Okay.
And other than that, with the 2.5 years that I've been here, I've never received a complaint. Myself and Kevin walked over, we talked to him. We expressed there are ideas on the grandfathering in. We've come down to that, the fact that he's very agreeable to this. I made up a license request for keeping the pigeons. It pretty much follows the chicken ordinance, the same fee, the same renewal. But yet we moved it to him allowed to have 60 chickens, to get down to 60 chickens and keep it at that point, And I will be inspecting the residents as I do the chickens. And he's very good at allowing me in. We have some work to do on getting the coops moved a little bit and justified the way we want them. But again, it's something that he's very adamant to, and he wants to work with us, and he's very appreciative to the board for allowing him to keep them. So I do not think I'll have any problems with him. Right now, he has 89 pigeons, which we were shocked at, and he said he was shocked at. The reason for, due to the fact that we have the COVID-19, they haven't had the races that they normally do, and with each race, you would lose some pigeons.
You'd think birds would know how to social distance, you know?
Yeah. No, they don't. They still. You throw them up there and see what a hawk gets them. That's the main thing.
So you in your memo, you used the term grandfather a couple of times. What are we grandfathering? He's been raising pigeons. He hasn't been breaking any laws.
Well, right. The fact that we did allow him to keep his pigeons as grandfathering them in, he normally doesn't have this many pigeons. He had never
had. So we're going to let him keep the 89, is what you're saying.
Pardon?
We're going to let him keep the 89.
Well, we're going to let him downgrade to the 60. For him to get rid of pigeons, he has to kill them.
Okay, so we're going to let him race them and let nature take care of itself.
Right, and he's not going to breed until he gets down. He also now has to take the same agricultural course that the people that raise the chickens have to take, which he hadn't done before, which was a state law. So with the original $50 fee, inspection every year like our chicken ordinance, and his $10 renewal, I do believe we will have no problem with him. And this keeps it just the fact that he is grandfathered in, and we won't have anybody else.
We won't, unless, of course, they take out a permit.
No, we're not going to start a permit for anybody else. We actually, if you look at it, you wouldn't want a permit in the village of Alloway. If you look at my letter, and you notice that there's only two areas that have them, and that's Greenfield and Hobart. And they're both more of a farming open community. If you were to allow permits in the village of Alloway, with the way our village is constructed, we could have two or three people in a 1 or 2 block area requesting pigeon permits, 60 pigeons each.
Okay. So you're recommending an ordinance that doesn't allow pigeons in...
No, what we're allowing, what we're going for is the fact the board saw that Omar has had these pigeons for 20 years with no true problems. The board felt that as long as he's been raising them for that long, that you said he could keep his pigeons, and we decided we'll get a permit, get some control, be able to watch what's going over and monitor it, and once he ever decides to stop raising pigeons, he's agreed that he will dismantle all coops and clean the area up.
Okay, so we will have to add an ordinance that doesn't allow pigeons in the village of Alloway.
No, we don't. All we're doing is
We do need one, right?
Pardon?
We are going to need an ordinance that does not allow pigeons to be kept in the village of Alloway other than Omar.
Well, I guess
we've got a one-time exception with Omar.
Right.
But probably have an ordinance written someplace that it's not permitted.
We'd have to amend an ordinance to include pigeons in the description, and that was part of the problem when Monica was reviewing the ordinance. It didn't classify.
Right. And that's my point. Mike's saying we don't want people to have pigeons because we could have all kind with hundreds and hundreds of pigeons. So we have to have something on the books that doesn't allow it.
We already addressed that last year when we had a duck issue. When we were bringing up the ducks that the young gentleman wanted, yeah. We brought up the fact that we didn't want ducks or any other birds or fowl except for the chicken ordinance.
Okay, so we do have an ordinance on the books that does not allow pigeons.
Let us review, yeah. And we can bring it back.
I just wanted to be clear, right?
Yeah, well, the direction that was given at the last meeting was we weren't looking at creating an ordinance. We were just allowing Omar to keep them and to set up a permit process. And that's kind of what Mike was reporting on, and whether or not the ordinance is needed.
Yeah, I just ask you to consider if you're concerned about people having pigeons, then we should have something that says they can't, outside of Omar. That's all. Does that make sense? Maybe it's the COVID. I don't know.
Run to the birds.
I'm a bird brain. Okay, and this is being recorded, so I admitted to it. Okay, thank you, Mike. Thanks for the update. There is no action to be taken on that. Moving on to item number 18. Are there any future agenda items that a fellow trustee would like to see on the agenda? Hearing none, I will invite someone to make a motion to adjourn this wonderful meeting.
Move to adjourn this wonderful meeting.
Trustee Sim. Seconded by Trustee Atwood. We have a motion to adjourn this wonderful meeting in a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes unanimously. I thank you one and all for the service to our great village.